You're tuned in to the Health After 30 podcast. And if you know what it feels like to try and change something in your health, in your work, or in your relationships, but you just kind of feel stuck and you're coming back to the same patterns, beliefs, stories time and time again, then there's something at the root cause that needs to change. And in today's episode, I'm talking with Andrew Court, and we are going to go into these root causes and talk about how to kind of shift them to be able to transform our lives. Hey, I'm Alana Bonneman, naturopath and holistic nutritionist. This podcast is dedicated to reclaiming your health by harnessing yourself as your biggest asset. Get ready, because this is where we stand up for your body's ability to heal, go against outdated norms, and say yes to change, creating true and lasting success, all from the inside out. Thank you so much for being here. This is the Health After 30 podcast, and let's get started. Hello, friends, and welcome to the Health After 30 podcast. Alana Bonneman here with you. And, you know, over the years, I've always promoted wellness for women. It's been a lot about getting to a feel-good weight. It's been about all the things that you can do. So like what you can be eating and how you can be moving and how you can be sleeping and all the tricks and tips that you can kind of be doing externally to promote your health. But through my own journey of late in these last years, I've started to find a new way of getting to really the root cause of what holds us back from how we feel, how our health is, how our life is, and just how we are in general. If we're not getting to the goals that we want, whether that's in our health, in our work, or in our relationships. And so my guest today, Andrew Court, really starts the conversation of something that I've been experiencing through my own journey. Andrew is the author of Create Yourself Anew, Above from Below. He's also a licensed chiropractor and seasoned in healing arts, and he has his own practice in New York where he walks people going in to perhaps a meditative state to unpack some of the limiting beliefs, stories, narratives, patterns, things that we hold on to, which I would kind of say are the root cause, which are preventing us from having any type of transformation in our life. And he talks about his way of addressing these root causes and his steps in how he works to kind of bring these darknesses to the light, as he will say, and then to allow them to dissipate or dissolve to make room for something else. So I really quite aligned with the conversation today, and I hope you also enjoy it because it is something new. And, you know, there are so many people talking about spirituality. And one thing that I find is we often bypass. It's like we want to just get to the good stuff. We don't want to have to feel the pain and the uncomfortableness and the suffering of what we're feeling, what is keeping us stuck in where we are. We just want the good stuff. But to travel through the uncertainty, through these uncomfortable feelings, I think, because in essence, those feelings are also associated with pain, whether it's physical pain, emotional pain, there are certain things that just feel uncomfortable. And that's often why we just want to get to that good stuff. So I invite you to lean into this episode with an open heart and an open mind, and see what you can take away from it and what you can kind of bring into your day-to-day to also transform your life for the better. Thank you so much for being here. I'm Alana Bonneman, and let's get into today's episode. Today, I have Andrew Court on the show with me. Andrew, thank you so much for being on the show with me today.
Thank you for having me.
So I want to start this whole conversation was something that I've read in your book, Andrew's book, which is called Create Yourself Anew from Above down. Seeking to never change goes against the laws of life, and life will always win. So change confidently, change consciously, change the way you wish to change, change gratefully, change happily, and be willing to change everything. I had to kind of take that snippet out when I read that, because I'm that type of person that believes change is constant. But change is hard. And many people struggle with change. I struggle with change myself. But change is always inevitable. Can you kind of welcome us into this area of how we change, perhaps as we evolve from our learnings from our past and what we inevitably come in the future?
Sure. There's a lot of things, a lot of angles to look at in that question. Where to begin? Well, one thing is that in every moment, everything changes. Nothing is the same right now in this whole universe as it was when I started talking a few seconds ago. Everything changes. If you try to fix the circumstances of your life without changing yourself inside, you're just fighting against your own vibrations, and you lose. You can't change those laws. If you're emitting the same vibration, you're attracting the same kind of life. If you don't change that and just try to work on that outer life that you're perceiving, you're just spinning your wheels, because you can't change that. You have to change yourself. And that means shifting within yourself how you're creating yourself in this space-time material reality that we're experiencing, which isn't the whole of existence by any means, but it's where and how we're experiencing ourselves. And experiencing ourselves in this space-time reality is what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to be having that experience. We can change that experience, but not by fixing the circumstances. We change that experience by changing our inner selves.
And how did you come to that conclusion yourself?
I've had two things running side by side throughout my life: my physical experience and my philosophical and spiritual path. When I was quite young, I believed that the experience of this life was kind of a battle between good and evil. And we are supposed to be on the side of good, and we're supposed to try and be kind and helpful and help each other and be moral and decent and make the world a better place. And I came of age in the late 60s, which was the perfect time to hold that idea. We're trying to make the world a better place. As time went on, I came to another conclusion, and I wouldn't say I dropped the first idea. It's still integrated as part of my spiritual understanding. All the great stories in the Western mythologies, the Bible, the Quran, the Greek myths, all those stories filled with stories of quests and journeys from one place to another were different ways that different cultures expressed their wisdom teachings, but the inner teaching was always the same. We're all going to the same place by different pathways through different stories and cultures. Why are we so mad at each other? Why are we hating and fighting with each other? The part of the story I want to tell begins when I was 23. I'm 74 now. When I was 23, I came down with a very debilitating and serious arthritic condition. And it was just getting worse and worse quickly. And I was living in the central part of New York State, and I went up to Syracuse Medical Center. And I went there at a time when, having just kind of gotten through my childhood, and now I was in my early 20s, I expected that the doctor would know what was wrong and give me the right pill, and I'd get all better. And that didn't happen. I tried taking 5 or 6 aspirin a day. So I tried that. Wasn't any better. Went back a week or two later, I suppose it was, and asked, what should I do? Because that didn't help. They suggest, try 10 aspirin a day. So I tried that. And to make a long story short, we got up to 20 aspirin a day was their recommendation. And at that point, I was smart enough to know that I had enough problems without adding bleeding ulcers to the list of issues. So I looked at this doctor I was talking to, and I said, look, do you have anything else that might work better than all this aspirin and make me feel better? He said, we do have some things that are much stronger, and they would help you feel a lot better. But they have a lot of side effects, and we'd rather not give them to you until you're bedridden. I said, bedridden? I was 23. I said, well, when do you think that's going to happen? And he said, somewhat nonchalantly, he said, well, the way this is progressing, probably within a year. Well, I walked away from medicine after that visit. They had nothing for me, and I just knew I couldn't go down that path. And rather than just sit there and wait to be bedridden, I started looking for other things that might help, trying all kinds of holistic things, which were new to me, to think in those lines. Some good friends of mine suggested I go see a particular chiropractor in Ithaca, New York. And I remember saying, you know, about the only thing that doesn't hurt is my back. Everything else hurts. My back, that's not the problem. I don't think I need a chiropractor, but they convinced me that he didn't just adjust backs. He did all kinds of holistic things, a lot of nutritional work, a lot of acupressure, and you know, different kinds of holistic things. And I should go see him, that he was really special. So I did. I went to see him. And I can say that after the first visit, I didn't feel any different. But I was just so delighted that someone did something. You know, he was tugging and pulling and adjusting and rubbing and testing things with applied kinesiology, arm testing and all the muscles with the body. And he was just very busy trying to figure things out and looking for things. And I was just so happy with that at least someone was trying to do something and not just talking to me for a minute and telling me to take aspirin and not go away. So I started going back. I was driving about an hour and a half to see him, but I'd go every week. And I can say that after about 2 or 3 months, it stopped progressing because every few days I was waking up with another joint really hurting. And that finally halted. And another couple of months later, I started feeling a little better. Well, I got very enthusiastic about this and applied and went off to chiropractic school myself and became a chiropractor. And I practiced in the East Village in the 1980s for 10 years. During that period of time, medicine actually came out with some things finally that were very helpful to me. Some medications that they couldn't stop the damage that had been done to my joints and my fingers. They couldn't change that, but it stopped the pain and the swelling and the inflammation. And I felt a whole lot better.
When I look into the spiritual space, people are always saying, you know, be grateful for this and grateful for the moment and go for joy and love and light. And it's always about the happiness side of it. A lot of the opposite, I guess, of happiness, joy, light, and love through your physical ailments, the pain that you had, and then, you know, different things that you've had to go through in your own life. When we are changing these behaviors and patterns, what's actually going on? Because I think it's almost like you've had to experience the hard side of it to come to the conclusion that the better side, the positive side, let's say. Well, I don't want to say positive side because I think all of those emotions and feelings that you'd had previously turned out to be a positive. Yeah. But what is the work from point A to point B there? Because I feel so many people just say, go for gratitude and go for love and light. But there are processes to get there. And all of the stories that we hear in the Quran and we hear in the Bible and in Hindu and, you know, even also within the Eastern culture, they do walk us through the same stories, the same story of our inner psyche, of what we need to go through. So what are the steps? You talked about 7 steps. What are the steps that one would have to take to get to that realization of, oh, this side of the coin is where I need to be standing or vibrating or living in?
This brings me to the book I wrote, which is the culmination of all this work I did on myself and the work that I do with my patients, the same line of thought, same work. The first chapter of the book is about a total mind shift. I think many, many people, maybe most people, have heard by now the change has to begin with changing your mind. And that's expressed in all those old stories. They all start with changing your mind. For instance, when Jesus is at the Jordan River and John is preaching repentance, the word repentance comes from words, they don't mean feeling bad because you were naughty and asking God to forgive you for the awful things you did. Repentance means changing your mind and thinking in a higher, new way, like the book Penses. That's the root of the word. It starts with changing your mind and thinking in a new way. So the mind shift that I talk about in the first chapter of my book is to turn yourself around 180 degrees from the bottom to the top. And this is why the book is called Create Yourself Anew from Above Down. The first mind shift change, the basic mind shift change, is realizing that you are not a separate, timid, only physical person struggling through this life. You are underneath that, prior to that, if you will, a sacred divine part of the universe, a sacred divine piece of God. And that divine God place in you is where you are a creator, where you have the power to create, because God creates. You don't have that power if you're totally focused down here trying to, you know, get a new car and fix the fact that you lost your job. And changing those circumstances down here, you are able to shift and create a different life as a creator. And you're a creator when you recognize you are a sacred, divine, creative being in the universe. And this is just a dream. And you can change that. So that mind shift from the above down is the first step toward real change. Otherwise, things get better one day and then they're worse the next. And you're just, you know, spinning around and you never really get very far.
Mm-hmm. Or even when you do make some changes,
you're not usually very happy with them. Sooner or later, they all just fall apart.
Yeah, they're deep. They run deep, those patterns and stories.
Yes. And then the next step, before you start rewiring your subconscious to live those changes you've decided to create, you got to get rid of all the debris that's in the way. It's like weeding a garden. Before all the new things can grow, you have to get rid of the weeds that are sabotaging the garden. Those weeds are all your negative beliefs and all the negative thinking and all the negative thoughts that are going on. Now, if you just jump to affirming things, like you were mentioning a minute ago, if you just jump to saying, well, I'm really tired of being poor all the time, so I'm getting all this new information about manifesting my life, so I'm going to start saying, I am wealthy, I am wealthy, I am wealthy, 20 or 30 times a day, morning and night. But you have an inner voice that's been telling you, you're never going to amount to anything, you're never going to get anywhere, you're not having any money, and you've been saying that to yourself for decades. Well, who's going to win that argument? Is the voice that's been entrenched there forever. So if you're just affirming what you know somewhere is just not true of me, you're wishing it were true, but you really know it's not, you're not going to really get anywhere just doing that. So you start with realizing you are a creative being. You can change your life and create the life you want. But before you do that, you got to get rid of all this negativity. So I talk about this in the book as the next step. And I do this work with my patients when they're with me. I get people down into a kind of trance state where they're making theta waves in their brain in this deep, deep relaxation, beyond relaxation, when they're really inside. And this is the state that hypnotists use. I don't do hypnosis. I do guided visualization kind of work, but I do a countdown, and many hypnotists have told me they're really the same thing. So I get people into that state, and then I have them ask their own higher guidance for some question. And it's different and it varies. And every time I see them, we go a little bit deeper and find something else. But the basic.
Could you give us an example of what a question would be to ask your higher self?
Yes, the basic two questions are, what am I believing about myself or the world that's keeping me stuck here? It's making me keep recreating this. What are my beliefs that are these limiting beliefs that's doing this? The other basic question, which we might not get to in the first session, but is what am I afraid of? What is the fear I'm having of change? What would happen if I had the life I want? What am I afraid would happen? And I don't answer those questions. I encourage you to ask those questions of your inner guidance and get an intuitive response. And I feel this is done much better when you're in this deep inner state where you can listen and hear that inner guidance and have this kind of conversation with your own intuition and your own higher self and get some clarity. Now, I tell people beforehand, don't fight against these beliefs and try to deny them. Because as Carl Jung made so clear, what you resist persists. You fight against it. You just give it more power. You know, I'm not going to think this. I'm not going to think this. Well, you just think it more than ever. What you do is what Socrates taught. He said, you observe yourself. Just observe what's going on. If you observe this inner state of negative belief about something, that's bringing it up into the light of consciousness. Dark things don't like the light. You're just seeing it, feeling it, experiencing it, and accepting it and not judging it, and just bringing it up into that light of consciousness, and grace will wash it away. And actually, I tell people, you don't actually dissolve and get rid of limiting beliefs. They got nowhere to go. Everything is here. But you can undo your attachment to them. That's what dissolves when you bring them up and just see them. Now, most of them are there for perfectly good reasons. Mummy said something when you were a child when she was in a bad mood one day, and she didn't even mean it and doesn't remember saying it. But you've been repeating it to yourself your whole life, taking it as true. Or teachers, or fathers, or friends, or kids in the street, or something in the culture, something gave you some idea that you weren't worthy, you weren't good, you'll never amount to anything, whatever the belief is, and you've been telling yourself that over and over and over and over again all these years. You got to bring that up and dissolve your attachment to it by just bringing it up. Now, they're there for legitimate reasons. In fact, in many cases, your ego is trying to protect you from a dangerous state called change. It's not mean. It's not trying to hurt you. It really, your ego thinks that's the right thing to do and will stick to it and stick to it and stick to it. That's why you have to get beyond the ego, sink deep within and talk to your higher guide and get this information, bring it up into consciousness and just let it dissolve away. Now, so just to keep on, once you've done these two things, you've shifted your mindset to realizing you're a sacred part of God and you're a creator and you can have the life you want. You can create the life. And you've gotten rid of all the things in your way of doing that. Now, start rewiring your brain with visualizations and affirmations and keeping a gratitude journal and all those steps and tools. And that's the next big section of my book, going through them all and how useful and wonderful it can be. And don't do them all if affirmations just don't work for you. Well, here's some different ways you may approach them, and if it still doesn't work for you, don't do that. Do what works for you. Change the affirmations that I give to ones that make sense to you, or don't use affirmations at all. Try visualization. Try being grateful more often. Try recognizing and keeping track of how you feel about gratitude all the time. And be gentle with yourself and good to yourself, because it's not easy to change. You've had years and years and years to have to undo things. I call it really dehypnotizing people And clarifying all of this for yourself and changing all of this for yourself toward what you have decided you want and deserve. So I go through all those steps. And then the last part of the book, I have three short chapters and the three big issues in my life that I've learned are pretty much the three big issues in many, many, many people's lives. How to shift into a life of abundance, how to shift into a life of better health, and how to shift into a life of better love relationships. So that's the book, and that's the work that I do with my clients. And I see clients here. I'm in Woodstock, New York, and I see people here. And I also can see people on Zoom. Most of what I'm doing works just fine.
Yeah, wonderful. So you're really taking people through the experience of unpacking what's holding them back.
Yeah.
And getting them into a state where they can allow these things to kind of surface. We do get stuck and get back into the same thing, and we do feel like our wheels are spinning. So if we are, you know, doing this work and meditating, and, you know, there's a lot of people in the health space now, they're meditating and they're ice bathing and they're, you know, doing all these things, trying to connect with themselves. If we're then taking it to the next level and unpacking all these uncomfortable feelings, bringing them to the light, how many layers do these feelings have? Because I feel like we have a lot of beliefs. We have a lot of patterns, narratives, stories. And even when you think you've got one away, they can still circulate back. Or perhaps it's another thing that's circulating back. You're kind of ripping back a peel of the onion and something deep is coming back.
Exactly.
So I guess maybe my question is, what's the timeline or what's the process that someone goes through when they are going on this journey?
Well, I have no specific timeline because everyone's different. Your basic point that there are layers and layers of these things, like peeling an onion, is absolutely accurate. You get rid of a negative belief. You get rid of your attachment to a negative belief. And then life doesn't change very much, because there's something else. And in fact, under it, and under the next 2 or 3 or 10 or 15 or 20 layers of belief, you get maybe to a core belief. But all these other things are swirling around this core belief. Mm-hmm. And you can't get to it directly because there's just too much in the way. So this work takes time. I mean, I tell my patients, you're not going to be all better. Just see me one day. And I'm not trying to get you to come back and come back and come back and come back and make a ton of money off you. I'm just trying to get you to be clear that you've got a lot going on for your whole life. And now you want to change your life and you're not going to change it in one day. You know, mm-hmm. there's more and there's more. I find very typically we have a core belief that may not be what we're thinking about and may not be what we deal with when we first start doing this kind of work. But somewhere, most people do have a core belief that says, I'm unworthy. You get to that, mm-hmm. and you change that or dissipate that, and now you can really start growing. Of course you're worthy. You're a perfect sacred being. You're a magnificent, sacred, divine heart of God. And how can you say you're unworthy? You know, it makes no sense, but you have that belief and you have to do inner work to get rid of that belief and let it go. One thing I sometimes do, I stole from Harry Potter. So, all right, I'm working with people now, they're in this trance and we're talking and they got some belief. And I say, now listen to the words you say to yourself. What does this belief tell you? For instance, the belief is saying, you will never amount to anything, or, you know, whatever the words are that are being expressed over and over again. I said, now listen to those words. Hear what it feels like. Oh, there I am. Now imagine a person, a man or a woman, standing there saying these things to you. You're using your imagination. Your imagination is your divine power to change things. It's not just, you know, some silly thing. You're just imagining that. Your imagination is divine. Sacred ability to shift and change things. I want you to imagine a man or a woman standing in front of you, saying these things to you, looking you right in the eye and saying this stuff to you. And now imagine that person, their hair turns into this bright red wild hair. Their face is covered with clown makeup. And their body is dressed in this clown outfit and these great big floppy shoes that are, they can hardly walk and knocking them over. And this clown is telling you these things. And I want you to look at that clown. No, it's a clown. It's telling you lies and being silly. And now you've got a magic wand in your pocket. Take out the magic wand, point it at the clown, and this is right out of Harry Potter. Say the spell, ridiculous. Point the wand and imagine it just dissipating and crumbling into pieces. And you just start laughing. This is one piece of imagery that I use that often helps people see the foolishness of what they've been telling themselves, and they don't have to tell themselves anymore. Mm-hmm. It's just a clown. And they're just lies. They're just something you heard that isn't true, and you can change it. This is one way to help do it. So, you know, that might come in the fourth session. I see some.
I think ultimately it's also about really feeling that feeling of, oh, you know, you mentioned before, and you also mentioned at the start of the episode too, to actually step into that feeling. If you've always experienced, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, I'm not this or that enough, then it's hard to really feel what it's like to feel the other side of that. But before you can get there, you are feeling what it's like to let go of that. And I think that's a very liberating feeling.
I have people get into their quest within about what it is that I'm hearing, talking to myself. I want you to now hear that in your mind's eye. What does that feel like? And you get instant answer. Oh, it feels horrible. It feels terrible. You know, it feels this. It feels that. Now feel that. Feel it's horrible. It's terrible. Really experience it and see it, smell it, taste it if you can. And what does it feel like in your emotion? So you experience it. And now, what would I rather feel? Now experience that. What does that feel like?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that feels really great. Well, what does it feel like to feel great? Feel that. And now, how do you feel about that initial problem? And it may feel a little weaker. But you go through it a few more times, maybe, until it kind of starts dissipating and letting go, and you're ready to feel what you've chosen are the feelings and the kinds of. There's a wonderful experiment that was done in the 1970s by a psychologist. I'm pretty sure his name was Michael Gelb, and he did this experiment where he found a bunch of young boys who loved playing basketball, and he got them together and had them shooting foul shots and kept really good records. So he had a kind of clarity on approximately how many foul shots would be successful out of how many attempts with each of these kids. And then he divided them into two equal groups. You know, they had the same skills and the same abilities. And he said to one group, he said, I want for the next 30 days, you're to come to this gym every day and practice shooting foul shots for an hour. Just keep shooting and shooting and shooting and practice and practice and practice for 30 days. And the other group, he said, you are not to come to the gym at all for the next 30 days, but you're to spend 1 hour a day visualizing yourself shooting baskets and watching them swish through the hoop one after another and doing it perfectly every time. Just keep visualizing that for 30 days. And then he brought them together and tested them again, and both groups had improved their skills and abilities the same amount, the same percentage of improvement. Your body doesn't know the difference between a vividly imagined experience, which includes how you feel, if there are smells, if there are sights that you see, that you hear, vividly imagined experience, and one that is taking place out here that other people could see if they were looking at you. It doesn't know the difference. You get the same changes in body chemistry. You get the same changes in brain waves. You get the same changes in your EKG. You get the same emotional changes. It doesn't know the difference. visualization is incredibly powerful to shift into what you're visualizing being your reality. My dad was a salesman. I remember 60 years ago him telling me, when I have a meeting with a client, I stand outside the door for a few minutes before I knock on the door, and I picture a really good meeting and making a sale, and then I go in. And since I started doing that, he told me, it's always been better. Mm-hmm. Athletes have always known this. You know, mm-hmm. Great athletes picture exactly what they want to happen before they go out on the field. You know, there's that great image of Babe Ruth saying, I'm hitting it right over there.
And he does.
And he did. Exactly what he visualized and said he was going to do. We have that amazing power to visualize things. Affirmations also help. Practicing learning how not to be reactive to everything that happens, try and stay within and be creative and not just let all your energy out in reaction. Mm. That's a great skill. Remembering to try to be happy. You know, one of the things Esther Hicks said that I remember so clearly many times, she said, you know, the reason you want things, you want a new car, you want more money, you want a new girlfriend or boyfriend, you want these things because you think they'll make you happy. Well, that means that all these things you want are on the frequency and vibration of happiness. So you just be happy. And that's so powerful all by itself, and all the good things just start happening. So practice happiness, you know, work on yourself and realize there is much to be happy about. And just, you know, don't hate them or be angry, but try not to dwell on the things that don't make you happy, and try and shift as much as you can
them.
To feel good.
Bring them to the surface. That's what I like about what you say. Mm-hmm. Bring them to the surface and dissolve them, because as so long as those feelings are there, even if you try to be happy, if you're still telling yourself that I'm not worthy enough for relationship, car, job, whatever it is. Yeah, and, beautiful.
For good reasons, but now you know better. And you start shifting everything and remembering who you really are, who and what you really are. Letting go, learning skills to let go of these negative things, bringing them to the surface and just letting them go. Mm-hmm. And then using all these tools to rewire your mind and rewire your heart and start giving off these new vibrations. Basically our happiness and feeling good, because that's why you're here, to feel happy and love being alive and love this magnificent life. And then you can't not change for the better. Another thing I remember Esther Hicks saying, if you just feel happy, you're already a whole lot better, even if nothing changes. You know, life is better if you feel happy. So you know, work on that, and then you'll see everything will change.
Even though you're happy, keep you down from being above and beyond. And what did Socrates say? From fulfilling perfecting the soul, you know, and evolving towards enlightenment. Because I think happy brings you here, and it's beautiful and it's great. It is great. And I think we can live there, but to go above and beyond that is you need these other feelings with the happiness. I guess that's the yin and the yang in the Eastern culture, right? To then really. Yeah.
If you recognize that this is a magnificent, benevolent, incredible experience, everything you experience is part of it, and none of it's bad or wrong. I had all those experiences I had with my health and my love life and all that gloominess and depression that I was in for many years. I wasn't bad. None of it was wrong. It was just an experience, and I'm here to experience. And I'm not here only to experience nice. We're here to experience everything, all of it. One of the points of view that I think is very accurate, I certainly can't prove it, it's not the kind of thing you can put in a test to, but it's always been talked about in spiritual circles. Neil Donald Walsh, I think, does a wonderful job talking about this in his books, Conversations with God, that God originally was pure awareness of everything, and it was all conceptual, but God wanted to experience itself. So it divided into a duality and then a multiplicity, and you can watch Genesis tell this whole story about, you know, creating this multiplicity of all of us and all of everything. To experience in a physical, experiential realm. So we're the eyes and ears of God. And God wants to experience everything and makes no judgments. you're bad, you're naughty, I have to punish you when you die. None of that is in this real inner spiritual traditions. You're here to experience everything. And when your experience is something you don't enjoy or prefer anymore, you can shift to experience something else. But there's nothing bad or wrong about what you were experiencing. You just have a new preference. And you've learned from it, and it was quite a trip. And you can be thankful and grateful for it. Thank you. And now I'm going to go experience something different, because I have this whole infinite reality in front of me, and I can experience anything and everything. And that's what I'm supposed to be doing, not choosing what's wrong in the world, but just experiencing everything and recognizing that it's all good and it's all perfect and it's all wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I have my preferences and I'm expressing myself, which is also, I think, why we're here, expressing who I choose to be. Well, do I choose to be a miserable, unhappy person, or do I choose to be a happy, you know, expansive person? It's my choice.
And that's your choice. That's what you said before. You choose if you change the channel, and you choose to stay changed through all of the strategies and, tools that you kind of walked us through before.
Yes.
And ultimately change your life.
We can choose what we prefer to experience, but don't do it by thinking you're choosing a better experience and the other one was horrible. The other one was a perfectly good show. You just don't want to watch that show anymore. We're here to enjoy the show, so let's watch one we enjoy.
That's so good. That's such a nice way of putting it. Andrew, thank you so much for sharing. I can hear a bit of echo, so I'm sorry if this is annoying anyone. But if there's anything that you want to impart with us, is there one thing that you would say, take this with you into your day and carry it with you?
Well, I do think the most important thing is the first sentence of my book. The first sentence of my book is, you are God. And then I clarify. Now, I'm not saying you're the God or the only God. You're not some nasty old man with a beard who's always mad at us and judging. God is everything. Every cell, every tree, every plant, every person, every universe, everything. You're God. There's nothing else to be made of. You're made of God. So you are God. Now, start with letting that sink in. You are a sacred, divine being and an expression of sacred, divine being. Or I like the word God, as long as I clarify I'm not talking about an old man in the sky. I'm talking about that totality of this magnificent universe. You are God. And when you start there, instead of I'm this timid, petty, separate person, and life is hard. And you shift to that perspective. If you do none of the other things I talk about, you just do that, everything will start changing all by itself, because you are now a different person, giving off a totally different vibration. Now, there's a lot more you may want to do to get the things you prefer to have in your life and to express in your life. And I'm not just talking about getting a Ferrari or a new house or a new boyfriend, but there's nothing. Every desire you have is life expressing itself and wanting to be more. That's a wonderful thing. Whether it's I want a Ferrari or I want world peace. And you're allowed to have both desires and all of them. It's all good, because it's all life growing and expanding and expressing who and what you want to be. It starts with knowing you can have, do, and be whatever you want, because you are God.
Andrew, thank you so much for being here. You are the author of Create Yourself from Anew, From Above Down. This book is available on all the places where you can buy books, for Amazon. I'll put a link in your bio.
Yeah.
Where else do you hang out online?
Well, I particularly invite people to go to my website, which is just my name, www.andrewcourt.com. If you go to my website, you find out all kinds of stuff about me if you want. You find out all about my practice. You find out all about this book that I've written, the newest one, Create Yourself Anew. If you put in your email in the box that's at the top of the website, I send you that book. And I'm working on an online course, which I hope will be done in the fall.
Thank you for being here today, Andrew.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here. You could have been listening to anything, but you're here interested in reclaiming your health. I hope you found the episode useful and constructive. If you enjoyed it and would like to show support for the show, please leave a review, as this makes my content more discoverable for other people to enjoy and learn from. Please also consider subscribing to the show on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever you enjoy listening. Finally, the best way to show support for the show is by sharing it with someone who you think might benefit from it. Thanks for listening. Be well, and I'll catch you next time.